The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Party. And then Chris Cook, who later became the chair of the Denver County Republicans. That's where I met all of those people on a different station. I think Randy refers to it not so fondly as Brand Z. And then Randy came over to KNUS, and I got to know Stefan. I had a small part in Denver in Decay. Stefan called or texted me one day during 2020 and said, "Hey, I'm going to be down around the Capitol filming. Would you be willing to be on air or, you know, on camera?" And I didn't really understand what the documentary was about. I probably didn't even understand it was a documentary at that time, but he was filming something. And I said, sure. Stefan has been very kind, identifying me as one of the very few elected officials who said yes, but I don't know how many people they asked. But then the documentary came out, and I saw what that was about, and I was kind of surprised. It really told a valuable, well-documented story about homelessness and the need of housing and maybe the failure of some attempts to address those issues in Denver. But Stefan and I got to be friends, and then I was asked to come in a guest host, and I love doing this. So I hope it's informative. I hope it is helpful, like Alan Kaiser, a constituent who I represent. I hope that learning more about our state constitution helps you be more effective here in our state called Colorado. Fred in Longmont had some questions about the budget process, and I mentioned in my first answer that we don't have these things called earmarks or pork barrel legislation in Colorado, and that's primarily due to the single subject requirement in our constitution and the balanced budget requirement. So I've not served in Congress, the federal legislature. That's the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate. They meet out in Washington, D.C. But my layperson understanding is that if a member of Congress, the United States House, is a no vote on a bill, the whip of a caucus might go to that member and say, "Hey, would you be a yes vote on the bill if we added in, let's say the bill was about military spending. It doesn't matter what it is, but just as a topic, a title of a bill, let's say military spending. You're a no vote on the military spending bill. Would you vote yes if we added in X number of million dollars to build a bridge or a post office or some federal thing in your district?" And the member could say yes or no. Those kinds of negotiations, as I understand, not being a member of Congress, maybe I'm wrong, but that's my layperson understanding of how business often gets done in the swamp in Washington, D.C. Those things don't happen in our state capitol, in the Colorado General Assembly, because of the single subject requirement. You couldn't put we don't build post offices and at least federal highways out of the state budget, but let's say someone came along and said, "You know, we'll put something in the state budget if you agree to vote for it." There's a couple of reasons why that doesn't happen. One is the single subject requirement, and two, if you take time to read the state constitution and you go to Article 5, the legislative department — I wish it said branch, but it actually uses the word department — Article 5, Section 22A, caucus positions are prohibited. It is an unconstitutional action. I'm not an attorney. I can't give legal advice, but the way I understand that defines how I lead the caucus that I do. 6 of the 8 years in the Senate, I am the leader of the caucus. I can't have those kinds of conversations with members of my caucus because the Constitution says those aren't allowed. And there's a single subject requirement, so we can't combine unrelated things. That's what pork barrel relates to or describes. You don't want to look in the barrel where all the different parts of the butchered pork are floating. It's disgusting. That's what pork barrel legislation means, is putting unrelated things in the same bill. We don't do that in Colorado because of the single subject requirement. and those kinds of negotiations, buying, negotiating with your taxpayer dollars for votes, that shouldn't happen. And in my experience in 11 years, doesn't happen. I was never approached by leadership with such an offer because Article 5, Section 22A prohibits caucus positions. So caucuses can't vote to determine what their position would be. And one legislator, whether we're in leadership or not, cannot offer an incentive or a discouragement. You know, if you don't vote the way I want you to vote, then bad things will happen for you. That shouldn't happen either. At least that's my reading of the state constitution. So if you assume that our state legislature worked a lot like Congress does, well, no, that isn't correct. And I understand this. I've explained that before on air. I've had conversations with people, and they might scoff and roll their eyes and say, well, it probably happens anyway. No, it really doesn't. I encourage people, maybe you want to go so far as put your name on the ballot, run for office, and get elected and be a state representative or a state senator in Colorado. I think you'll find you'll be waiting a long time before that kind of conversation, that sort of opportunity comes to you, because that's not the way our state legislature works. Why? Because the people of Colorado made it that way. The people of Colorado didn't want earmarks and pork barrel and negotiating for votes with your taxpayer dollars. And the caucus positions, the prohibition on caucus positions, that the primary reason that I think that's in our state constitution, again, Article 5, Section 22A, is that so that your legislators, your state representative and your state senator are accountable to you, the constituents in the district that they represent, not to other legislators, especially leadership of the caucus. So as the Senate Republican caucus, we can sit together and talk about things. We had this kind of conversation about the federal funding that Congress sent to all of the states. I believe that zero states returned that federal funding. The states where Republicans hold trifecta, governor, House, Senate, probably attorney general, I don't think any of those states said, no, don't send the federal funding or sent it back. But our caucus sat down here in this currently blue state with Democrats in majority control of the House, Senate, and the governor's office. And we made the determination that if the federal government, if Congress was going to send Colorado $3.8 billion, well, we were going to be at the table to represent our constituents and determine how that $3.8 billion would be distributed, allocated in our state budget over a 2 or even 3 year process. And that decision was 15-0. We didn't vote, but we asked everybody, what is your opinion? We didn't say, this is what your opinion better be, or you have to, you know, be with leadership. But how do you think you best represent your constituents? Because that's the way it's supposed to work here in Colorado. A lot of people, I understand, will doubt that, roll their eyes. Oh, no, they probably make these side deals and negotiate things. But if you really, really, really don't believe me, put your name on the ballot, run for office, and let me know if that ever happens in the time that you serve in the state house or state senate, because in 11 years, I haven't experienced that. It just isn't like what I understand Congress to be. Let me share one more bit of the state constitution. I think this is really helpful. I summarized earlier, our legislators have one power, state legislator, they have one power, and that is to vote yes or no on hundreds of bills during a session, a general session each year that can be no more than 120 days long. We're going to start that next session on Wednesday, January 12th. Simple majority rule, one more than half in a chamber is what it takes to establish quorum and to pass a bill. So the minority can't shut down the process like happened in Texas and years ago in Wisconsin. The legislators friendly with the teachers union, Democrats, sorry to repeat myself, they somehow shut down the process in Wisconsin and they were in the minority. That can't happen in Colorado because our quorum requirement is based on a simple majority and the Democrats have more than that in both chambers. But the next section that I want to tell you about, Article 5, Section 17, no law but by bill. This goes to a conversation that is very common. People will contact me and say, I want this changed in state law. And I explain, okay, well, we'll have to run a bill in the next session and we can draft that bill. And sometimes people will say, I don't want a new bill. I just want you to change the law. No, the only way that our state legislature, the Colorado General Assembly the only way that they get to make new law, change existing law, or get rid of an existing law is by a device called a bill. No law, but by bill. And the only way to introduce a bill is during a session, which is either that annual general session between early January and early May each year, or a special session called by the governor, because that other opportunity for two-thirds of both chambers to agree and call its own special session, that really got boxed in or closed out in 1988 when the people told the legislature in the Constitution, you can only meet in general session for 120 days. And the legislature's never, as far as I know, has ever called a special session of its own here in Colorado. So if we have to be in session in order to introduce a bill, then 8 months a year, there are no bills and there is no lawmaking authority. That's the way it works in Colorado, because that's the way the people of Colorado wanted it to work. I think gluing all these pieces together helps people understand the limited authority that the people of Colorado have delegated to the state legislature in this state. Now, if you're from California, I believe that the California legislature meets year-round. They can decide when they want to meet. That's how the Colorado legislature worked from 1876 up till 1988. At least that's my understanding of it. I don't know that our legislature actually met year-round, but since the vote of the people in November 1988, our legislature gets to do that, have that authority for no more than 120 days each year. Article 5, Section 25, Special Legislation Prohibited. This is a long paragraph, and if you make it to the website and you read the state constitution, I encourage you, go read Article 5, Section 25. Our state legislature is prohibited by our state constitution from enacting legislation that would grant, quote, any corporation, association, or individual any special or exclusive privilege, immunity, or franchise, whatever. That's a whole program, three-hour program discussion. But if you came from a state where special legislation is allowed and you see that, you know, favoritism, cronyism, maybe that happens in Congress, take a look at Article 5, Section 25 of the Colorado Constitution. And then one that I love to talk about, Article 5, Section 20. This is referring to what we know as the Gavel Amendment. And Gavel was another constitutional amendment the voters approved back in 1988. 120-day session and the passage of the Gavel Amendment, two different questions on the ballot in November 1988. Now, if you didn't live here 33 years ago, that's okay. If you weren't old enough to vote 33 years ago, or maybe you weren't even born yet 33 years ago, but you're old enough to vote today, maybe you don't know about the Gavel Amendment. The populist messaging, as I recall from the Gavel Amendment back in 1988, I was 27 years old and I lived in Colorado when I voted. I'm sure I voted yes on the Gavel Amendment, and probably on the 120-day question as well. Gavel is an acronym, and it stands for Give a Vote to Every Legislator. And the populist messaging back in 1988 went something like this. There's 100 legislators down at our state capitol, and some of those people, whether they're Republican or Democrat, they introduce some of the silliest bills every year. Now, if you vote yes on the Gavel Amendment, what it would require in our state constitution is that every bill that is introduced must have a public hearing. And if it has a public hearing, fellow citizen of Colorado, then you get to show up at the state capitol, put your name on a list, and you will be called and you will get to have your voice heard. Do you want to have your voice heard? And I don't have it in front of me, but if memory serves correctly, about 72% of the people said, yes, I want to have my voice heard. Well, that's populist messaging, and populist messaging is specifically designed, purposefully designed to get people to say yes adamantly or no adamantly. Populist messaging isn't what Paul Harvey used to do on the radio, the late, great Paul Harvey. He would tell us the rest of the story. Well, here's the rest of the story on the Gavel Amendment. Over the past 3 years, with Democrats controlling our state House, Senate, and the governor's office, have there been any bills that you wish just didn't exist? And if so, have you advocated to one, some, or all of our state legislators that they not advance the bill, pull the bill, remove the bill, don't advance it, don't vote on it, don't take up the bill, pull your sponsorship, stop the bill right where it is? If you have advocated such things to one, some, or all of the legislators in the Colorado General Assembly, don't mean any insult, but please consider that you may have advocated blatantly that legislators violate the state constitution, blatantly for things that are unconstitutional. Why? Well, the Gavel Amendment didn't say in order to advance a bill must have a public hearing, or in order to advance it must be voted on at the next stage in the process. It didn't say in order to advance. It said every bill that's introduced must have a public hearing. And again, that's sort of populist messaging. What Gavel did is it required that every bill that is introduced must continue through that 120-day legislative process until it either passes or fails. That's what the Gavel Amendment did. And I describe it in layperson language as the Gavel Amendment eliminated all forms of pocket veto, the ability of one person, a legislative leader like the president of the Senate or the speaker of the House or a committee chair, to stop a bill. One legislator can't do that. Even a bill sponsor in a Colorado process cannot decide, never mind, once a bill is introduced, the only thing that can stop that bill is a vote by at least a simple majority of the members of a committee or a chamber. Last year, listeners to 710 KNUS got involved in advocating against a school discipline bill. I think the bill number was either 162 or 182. I should have looked that up before I got on this long monologue. But Senator Janet Buckner, state senator, late husband, Representative Buckner, was a school principal before he served in the state legislature. And Senator Buckner was working with some Democrat representatives on a school discipline bill. And people found out about that bill and they became rather outraged that it would have, frankly, prohibited any sort of discipline for, even violent actions. And it was just unacceptable. Well, the advocacy against that bill resulted in Senator Buckner deciding that she didn't want to support it. And the media, Denver Post, Colorado Sun, I think, they reported, they actually used the word pull, that Senator Buckner decided to pull her bill. No, she didn't. And I'm not trying to scold the media. Maybe they didn't really understand. But the day after the news broke that that bill would not advance, Senator Buckner took that bill to the Senate Education Committee, explained that she no longer supported it, and asked the committee to vote in favor of postpone indefinitely, which is legislative terminology for kill. And the committee voted to PI, postpone indefinitely the bill. It wasn't pulled. It wasn't ignored. That's not allowed in our process. So for those who might have heard the populist messaging, do you want to have your voice heard? Would you have voted for the Gavel Amendment in 1988? Most people adamantly say yes. Well, okay, the rest of the story is, if you've advocated that certain bills just go away, not be advanced, pull it from the table, stop it, don't vote on it, well, none of those things are allowed because the people of Colorado approved the Gavel Amendment, me included, not shaming or blaming. This is how it works. And the Gavel Amendment requires that every bill continue to move through the process during that 120-day session. I was the Senate Majority Leader for 2 years, and my primary responsibility was managing that flow of bills through the committees. I appointed the committee chairs and the vice chairs and the members of those, the majority members of those committees, and my job was to manage all of those hundreds of bills that would be introduced in the Senate to make sure that they reached a finite conclusion. They passed or failed at or before midnight of the 120th day. We are in our last hour. I've just been told in my ear that we need to head toward the first break of the hour. So if you have a question, I've got a few more things to talk about with the state constitution, but gosh, I don't want to just sit here and ramble on about the constitution. Tell me what questions you have. comments. If there's something I haven't addressed, feel free to use the 710KNUS app to text us here at the studio. You can download that from the App Store, and it literally gives you the ability to just communicate with us right here on the Wall of Love or Wall of Hate. This morning it's been primarily love. Or you can pick up the phone and call us here at 303-696-1971. You're listening to Wake Up with Randy Corporan here on AM 710 KNUS. Good morning and welcome back. You're tuned to Wake Up with Randy Corporan here on AM 710 KNUS. I'm State Senator Chris Hulbert, and occasionally I get the privilege of sitting in for Randy or Stefan. I think George Brockler once. It's just cool. Kelly Michaels here at the station will text or call me and say, hey, on this date, this time frame, can you be here? And just so you know, I don't get paid extra to do this. I do this because I love it. And Governor Polis was on yesterday. He teased me that maybe he would tease his longtime friend. I think they established a friend through baseball. But Governor Polis asked if he might tease Stefan, that Stefan better look over his shoulder because I'm going to be done in the legislature in the year. We have term limits. That's another thing that people of Colorado voted on back in the early 90s. And I'm term limited. I won't be able to serve in the legislature and make the whopping $40,242 salary that we pay legislators. Thank you for that. Not complaining. That's what it is. I'm about to turn 61. I'll be done in a year. And looking at 62, I plan to go back to the private sector and try to make vastly more money. No one gets rich in our General Assembly, our state legislature. I've been around there for 20 years in and out of the Capitol, and I've never seen anyone become wealthy in our state legislature. It isn't Congress. I want to bring on another guest, George, and I think he wants to wish maybe me and all of us a happy new year. George, welcome to Randy Corporan.
Thank you, Senator. I'm an old guy, 85 years old, and I appreciate your balance and your rationality. And you don't, from what I've studied your career, you don't take it personally, and you don't make politics personal.
Yes, sir.
And I think that tragedy in Boulder County should make all of us understand we're all Coloradans. Doesn't make any difference what our party is, our race, or anything like that. We're all Coloradans. We're all hurting. And I'd like to express my sympathy for the people in Boulder who experienced that tragedy. And I know you're going to do everything you can for them,
no matter
what their party or politics are. That's the way you are, and I appreciate you.
Oh,
and I'd like to wish you a happy new year, and let's get along a little better. The Senate and House are both Democrats, but they can give the Republicans a better chance.
Well, thank you, George, and happy new year to you as well. I hope people around the state will recognize an opportunity when voting, if your state Senate district is on the ballot in 2022, that is the most likely place that we can achieve balance again in our state legislature. Currently, there's 15 of us in the Senate Republican caucus. A simple majority of the 35 seats in our state Senate is 18. I have had the privilege of serving in the Senate majority for four of my years in the state Senate, two of my 4 years in the state House. So when I'm done next year, I will serve a total of 12 years, four in the House, eight in the Senate. And I'm one of, I think, three Republicans in the legislature right now that who will have served 6 years in the majority and 6 years in the minority during those same 12 years. Colorado works better with a split legislature, a shared majority. And as a Republican, yes, I would love to have a Republican governor, a Republican majority in the House and the Senate, and be able to reverse some of what my colleagues on the other side of the aisle have done when they've held trifecta. But a split legislature, most things get done. It doesn't lead to gridlock. And it actually, because of the balanced budget requirement and how the Joint Budget Committee is 3-3 when we have a split legislature, it actually requires people to work together and talk to each other. So, George, I share your perspective, and I'm grateful for your New Year's wishes. The last thing I would mention is that I have always strived to be the most conservative legislator you'll deal with, at least in our state legislature, who holds a liberal arts degree. I am a conservative. I know what I consider to be the proper role of government and the defense of the Constitution, but I'm not offended when people disagree with me, whether they're constituents or fellow legislators. And I really hope that we can find more of those. I am not a moderate. I've been the highest rated in the Senate, I think highest rated in the House 1 year by the Colorado Union of Taxpayers. I've been a champion. The different groups that rate, I've tended to done very well with those. So it's not about being a moderate and not being principled, but maybe being pragmatic and being willing to listen to other perspectives.
But from what I've seen, you don't take people who disagree with you, you don't take it personally. And
try
you
not
don't
to.
Hatred for them.
There's That's right. Hate,
too much hatred going on. It's not good for this state or this country.
I agree. I tease some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, just because they vote wrong all the time doesn't mean I hate them.
That's right. that's part of our Judeo-Christian background.
Amen.
You don't hate the person. You may not like what they do, but you don't hate the person.
Yep.
So,
well, George, thank you so much
God
for your call.
God bless you, and let's all have a better New Year, and let's hope this virus, we get rid of it.
Yes, sir.
It's a blight. So
yes,
thank
sir.
You so much. Thanks for letting me dialogue with you.
Yes, sir. Happy New Year, George. Thanks for calling in. The next bit of our Constitution that has come up is subpoena power. There were a lot of people who saw what happened in Arizona, and I had voice messages on my Capitol line that were just, you know, profanity, just screaming and accusing me of not having the backbone or the intestinal fortitude to use my subpoena power. I don't have subpoena power. The legislature does. And one day I was sitting in here for Stefan, I think, and I explained that during the 8-month interim, the process of our legislature, our state legislature, granting subpoena power starts and ends with the Senate president and or the Speaker of the House. And both of those gentlemen currently are Democrats. So when our legislature is not convened, the chair of a committee called Legislative Council, which is 18 members. Currently, Democrats have 11 seats and Republicans have 7. Senator Leroy Garcia is currently the Senate president. He represents Pueblo, and he is the chair currently of Legislative Council. That chairmanship will transition here very shortly, just in the next few days or a week, to Representative Alec Garnett, the Speaker of the House, a Denver Democrat. During the 8-month interim, if the chair of Legislative Council decides to call a meeting of Legislative Council, those 18 members, then Legislative Council has the authority to delegate subpoena authority to a House committee or a Senate committee or a joint committee of the two, a House and Senate committee. If Legislative Council delegates subpoena power to a committee, then, again, the way the process starts is the chair of that committee, either the Speaker or the President, have to call that meeting for that purpose, and neither one of them were interested in doing that, I'm sure. And if the committee grants subpoena power to a committee of the House, a committee of the Senate, or a joint committee, then the subpoena must be signed by either the president, the speaker, or both of them. If it's a joint committee, it would be both. So those two people right now, Representative Garnett and Senator Garcia, they have a very high level of power and control over that. That interim process cannot start without them, and it cannot end. If the committee were to say, yes, we grant subpoena power to this committee, it literally says that the subpoena isn't valid unless it's signed by the appropriate authority, and that is Senate President Leroy Garcia or Representative Speaker of the House Alec Garnett. I walked through that process, and I also had tried to spend time that show to explain, remember that we legislators, we elected officials, but specifically legislators in our state legislature, we don't report to each other. I don't report to another elected official. I don't report to the governor. I don't report to the Senate president or the Speaker of the House or any other elected official. My boss are constituents in a place called Senate District 30. And the same goes for other elected officials. They don't report to me. Who do they report to? They report to the constituents who live, and specifically those who vote in the different jurisdictions. I explained that. And the day that I went through the subpoena power question, the very last caller that day, a lady called in and asked, well, Holbert, have you asked Garcia? Would he call that meeting? And I was frustrated because I thought I had talked enough that day that me asking him doesn't make that happen. The president or the speaker might respond to constituents, especially those who live in the districts they represent. But in the capacity of Speaker of the House or President of the Senate, they probably need to listen to constituents statewide. Even though I was frustrated, I didn't have time to sort of re-explain all that, I was in a meeting with President Garcia after that. And I explained, I was guest hosting on 710. I was sitting in for Stephen Tubbs. I walked through the subpoena power. I walked through legislative council, how this process works. But then the last caller asked, and I felt like I'd failed in explaining, the last caller asked a question that really doesn't apply had I asked him. Because, you know, Senator Garcia knows as well as I do, he doesn't report to me and I don't report to him. And I shared him with him that perspective, and I looked at him and I said, so would you call the meeting? And he smiled and looked at me and said, no. I share that story not that to make you angry at my colleague, Senator Garcia, but to remind you that please remember that representative government, our state legislature, the way our process works here in this state, you can advocate your position on any given bill, any topic, to the legislators who will make that decision. You are not confined only to your state representative and your state senator. Here's an example, or here's an explanation, the history. I talked about the gavel amendment earlier. Give a vote to every legislator, and that amendment to our state constitution requires that once a bill is introduced, that it must be assigned to and heard by a committee of reference, and that gives you the opportunity to testify for or against that bill. And the bill must move forward until it either passes or it fails. What if there's a bill that you like or don't like, and it's headed to a committee for one of those public hearings, and the person who happens to be your state representative or your state senator based on where you live, the coincidental geography of a state house or Senate district, what if your state legislator in that chamber doesn't serve on that committee? Are you somehow prohibited from advocating to those legislators who do? No. As a person, one of the people of Colorado, what I'm here to encourage you to is understand that the result of that vote in November 1988, when the gavel amendment was adopted and amended our state constitution, the result was it didn't just give you permission, but actually required that if you want to advocate for or against a bill, you don't focus on the two people who happen to represent you based on coincidental geography. You can advocate to the legislators who serve on that committee or in that chamber, no matter where you live or where they live. We don't see that from Congress, our federal legislature. If you've ever attempted to communicate with a member of Congress, you'll probably end up at a web page that has a Senate.gov or House.gov address, and there will be a, you know, communicate with us, email us link, and you'll end up on a web page with a series of fields. And one of those fields that you'll be asked to fill out is, what is your address? Why is that important? That tells them where you live. That tells them, as a result, what congressional district you live in. Here in Colorado, if you're in Douglas County, do you live in Congressional District 4, represented by Ken Buck, or do you live in Highlands Ranch, that's currently in Congressional District 6, represented by Jason Crow? No matter where you live in Colorado, John Hickenlooper and Michael Bennett are our two U.S. senators. Congress goes out of its way to try to funnel advocacy only to the people who represent you based on geography. What House district you live in and what state you live in relative to the U.S. senators, that is not how the Colorado General Assembly works. And I just encourage you, don't just feel that you have permission, but the people of Colorado decided that you would be fully entitled to make your opinion known to the legislators who will vote on any matter at the next step. And when we get back to subpoena power, you know, through the summer, everyone would have been welcome to communicate with Senate President Leroy Garcia and say, call a meeting of legislative council. I don't think he ever would have. He served as the vice chair of a committee called Joe Biden for President here in Colorado. And I think President Garcia is pretty comfortable with where that election started. But getting back to something that I mentioned earlier, just because you're mad doesn't mean you're right. And I'm not here to make fun of you, shame or blame. I'm just here to explain advocacy can be more effective. And that's my goal, to help you understand how our state works and how you can be more effective. We are headed to another break. It flies by so quickly. We've got 19 minutes left in the program. Give us a call here if you have a question. I'd be happy to talk. 303-696-1971. I'll take the break to catch up on some text messages that came in through the app. You are listening to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran here on AM 710 KNUS. Don't fear the Reaper. You're listening to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran here on AM 710 KNUS. I'm State Senator Chris Hulbert, sitting in for my friend and our regular host, Randy Corcoran. He gets a day off. Yesterday, had the opportunity to fill in for Stefan, and we focused on the fire, the recovery from that up in the Superior area. And I want to, if you haven't heard this already, I want you to please consider how you might be able to help. You can help help those affected by the devastating fires in Boulder County by donating to the Red Cross. To do that, go to 710knus.com and click on the Red Cross banner to make a donation. Or you can text Red Cross, REDCROSS, Red Cross to 90999. Either way, your support will benefit local Red Cross chapters responding to the fires. We had Andrea Carlson from the American Red Cross on the show yesterday, and she explained that they don't want or need right now material donations like toothbrush, toothpaste, clothing, socks, that they have those items. What they're in need of right now are dollars. And the American Red Cross is out there whenever these kinds of disasters happen. They're out there immediately helping people in the communities. They are feeding and providing shelter and warmth and clothing for people who are confronted with, some of them has lost everything. Their house, their apartment, wherever they lived is a crater of ash. We had the opportunity. It was, I think, a remarkable moment, at least in my brief radio career. Our last guest last night was a lady who works at the Capitol. I know her first name is Cara. She and her kids live up in the Superior area. She was evacuated out of her home, went to, I believe, her parents' house, and then that got evacuated. And they ended up in a friend or relative's home in Lakewood. I think that she said they had seven people in a two-bedroom house. Happy New Year. But she related to me early yesterday that she would have the opportunity to drive into her community, park in some designated location, and then walk, hike up a hill, and she would be able to see whether her house was there. And I said, great, would you be willing to come on air at 6 o'clock New Year's Eve and share with us your experiences in evacuation and what the fire did, and ultimately let us know whether your house is still there? I asked her to let me know during the day. She didn't do that. And I feared the worst. And as I related going into the 6 o'clock break, near the top of the hour, she was going to call us and let us know, and she did. And thankfully for her, the news was good. Her house is still there. She can see houses, communities from where her house is that didn't have that outcome. So if you can help, there are hundreds of families up in the Superior area who need the help of the American Red Cross. And I know from experience that the KNUS audience, that we are generally people of faith. We look out for each other. And I would just be so appreciative, really thank you for those who have already done this and those who might take the opportunity right now to go to 710knus.com, click on the Red Cross banner, and make a donation. Thank you. We've been talking this morning about how Colorado is a unique state, why things work in unique ways here in Colorado. When a bill is before the legislature and you like it or don't like it, don't just know that you have permission, that it's acceptable, but really our process was amended by the people of Colorado to require that advocates for or against a bill communicate with the people who serve on the committee or in the chamber that who will next vote on that bill. What determines whether a bill moves forward in the process or fails, if it dies, the legislative language is postpone indefinitely, or PI, that all hinges on the vote of a simple majority more of members of a committee or a chamber. Currently, Democrats hold 41 seats in the State House of Representatives. There's a total of 65 seats. Democrats hold 41, Republicans hold the other 24. A simple majority in the House chamber is 33. If 33 are there, and Democrats can do that on their own, if 33 are there, they can vote on any bill, you know, not a matter to refer a constitutional question to the voters, that takes two-thirds, but a bill, a simple bill to create change in state law, 33 people have to be in the House chamber, and at least 33 have to vote yes. In the Senate chamber, there's 35 seats, and the key number is 18. Currently, Democrats hold 20 seats, and Republicans hold the other 15. 20 is more than 18. 15 is less than 18. Over in the House, Democrats hold 41. 33 is the critical number. 41 is more than 33. And Republicans hold 24. 24 is less than 33. If you want to change that, then voting for a Republican on your ballot, all 65 state House seats are up for election every 2 years, and either 17 or 18, approximately half of the state Senate, are on the ballot every 2 years. When you're voting in November of 2022, you know, my ask as a Republican is think about that. You don't have to be a card-carrying Republican or proclaimed, self-proclaimed conservative. If you want balance, as some of the callers have observed, you might vote for such balance. If Republicans can gain at least 3 seats in the state Senate and get back to where we were for the first 4 years that I was in the state Senate, then Republicans would be able to shut down, kill any bill they didn't like. And when we have a split legislature, as we did my first 4 years in the Senate, Republicans could kill any Democrat bill that we felt went too far, and Democrats could kill any Republican bill that they felt went too far. But it doesn't lead to gridlock. We might see that in Washington, D.C., maybe in other states, but some of the magic that you, the people of Colorado, have put into our state constitution is that you require the legislature to pass one bill every year, the budget. The budget is a bill. It becomes law for a year. And you require that in our constitution of your legislature to pass a budget, and that the budget must be balanced. Where does the budget start and end? Who writes the budget? It's a group of six legislators who serve on what's called the Joint Budget Committee. And JBC, six members, when there's a split legislature, it means that there are three Republicans and three Democrats, three from the House, three from the Senate. The way that works is there would be two majority from each chamber and one minority from each chamber. But when we have a split legislature, it's 3-3. We're required to pass the budget. And that means that those six people are required to talk to each other, required to negotiate, and required to craft a balanced budget that allocates your state tax dollars in a balanced way. Right now, we don't have that. Democrats control both chambers, so Joint Budget Committee is 4-2, Democrats and Republicans. They still work together. They don't fight like cats and dogs. Things still get done, and the voice of the minority is still heard. But if you feel like Colorado government, our legislature, doesn't accurately represent the Colorado that you know, which tends to be fairly split, it's because one party has that control. So I would encourage you, keep that in mind, as Alan Kaiser encouraged us earlier. Maybe take the knowledge that you now have and convey it to others. It isn't about personalities in Washington, D.C., who the president is or who's leading what chamber in Congress or what a national person on national TV or radio might tell you. What matters here in Colorado is how our unique state works and who controls each chamber of our legislature and who the governor is. Gosh, I fully expect Governor Polis to run and use his vast personal net worth to secure another win. Hope that's not the case. It won't be me running against him, but please vote Republican for governor. But the most likely place that we would see change is in gaining three seats in the state Senate. And that doesn't mean that we take a hard right turn. It just means that we have balance. We would have balance once again in our state legislature. I want to use my last minute on air to say thank you to Randy Corcoran for giving a thumbs up to let me sit in this seat this morning. Kelly Michaels, thank you for the call. I think my answer will always be yes. To Gene Bennett, thank you for being a great producer and helping keep me on track. And for all the callers, all the texters, thank you for being part of the KNUS community. Happy New Year. This is Wake Up with Randy Corcoran here on AM 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.